Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! The third full week of June beginneth here, right? Yeah, it's the 15th day of June, 2015. 6-15-15, for those who like it with numbers behave that way. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That is where you go if you want to participate in the multimedia real-time extravaganza that is The Horn chat room. Folks wandering by, even as we speak. If you want, if you've never been to the chat room and you would like to give it a go, well, just pick yourself, go there, give yourself a screen name, pick yourself out a password, and zing, there you are. And so one of those for longtime, indefatigable, inveteran chat room moderators Lottie and Sparky, as well as Mr. Gibson and Texas T, also in the room to get us going this evening. Yes, indeed. We are, of course, The Horn, and being The Horn, we are a listener-supported broadcast effort. We're not trying to raise enough money here for a Gulfstream jet or even a miserable Maybach. No, hell no. Most of the time, the Cabana Boy doesn't even get paid. Getting tired of being called Agnes' Cabana Boy, by the way. He is the Cabana Technician now. And I can understand that. No, we try to keep everything rolling that is absolutely necessary to the continuation of the program, to wit, a whole bunch of bills associated with things like telecommunications, two of which were actually due a week ago, but, you know, we kind of run behind here. And so we're trying to raise $1,000 this week, and we'll do that $200 at a time, hopefully. So we're trying to raise $200 this evening, 200 tomorrow, 200 Wednesday, 200 Thursday, 200 Friday. That's generally how it goes. So if you would like to be part of the fundraising, run on by headonradionetwork.com/contribute, and there you will find the PayPal interface, which you can fill out as much as is necessary, but not a jot, not a tittle more, and you will be a part of the effort that keeps all of this going. In particular, the nosier parts of the PayPal interface, leave it alone. Fill out just enough that you can click next and get to the next screen and do all the PayPal stuff and or the credit card stuff, however it is you want to do it, to help keep things going here. If, on the other hand, you do not like PayPal, and there are many people who don't, the United States Postal Service is still at your service until such time as maybe 2016 rolls around and we elect ourselves a Republican president. Jeb! You know, because he's got an exclamation point behind his name. I'd like to buy an exclamation point for 1,000, Alex. Jeb! Who announced his presidential ambitions today. Jeb! And do remember, please, when we call him Jeb, We're actually saying, since his name is John Ellis Bush and not Jeb or Jebediah or Jebedee or Jebedudoday, but John Ellis Bush, please remember, when you say Jeb, you're saying John Ellis Bush Bush. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's like the Polynesian language preference for saying words twice. You know, Bora Bora, Pago Pago. But I prefer to refer to him, and I will, whenever possible, refer to him by his true name, Ellis Bush. Nigerian scam artist. Maybe we'll get around to... Well, there's one! Look, wait. We got an early one for... Early one of those, and I think a toaster, too, for Mr. Gibson. Jeb, just elect Bernie. Yes! Yes! And in that case, well, the exclamation point fits too. Just elect Bernie! Exactly. Oh, I love that. I love that, Mr. Gibson. Is that yours? I mean, you are deserving of high praise if that is an original, if that is an original Mr. Gibson creation. Just elect Bernie. It's been a while since we came right out of the gate with a toaster award, but I think that one certainly does qualify. But anyway, if you prefer to help keep the program on the air via the U.S. Postal Service, I will ask you, first of all, send me an email so that I can tell Boss Man Wayne he needs to go to the mailbox in 2 or 3 days. And then address your correspondence to The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, not Berkeley, but Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, WV 258. 01. And we are off and started this evening with a kind contribution, anonymous, I presume. No, I don't presume. But we now have only $175 to go in the fundraising this evening. Yes, indeed. With regard to the mails, please remember, make all checks and money orders payable to The Horn and not Bob Kincaid, because I never see him, so I don't endorse him. So... that's all Boss Man Wayne's stuff, which he does with our, you know, with our account. So just make it to The Horn, not Bob Kincaid, please. And thank you all very kindly in advance. Hopefully we will reach that fundraising goal sooner rather than later. Like I said, every nickel that we raise this week will go to pressing, and I do mean pressing, bills. Check out a hashtag if you're out there on Twitter, and I guess we use hashtags on Facebook now too, don't we? Burn baby burn, B-E-R-N baby B-E-R-N, burn baby burn. Mr. Gibson is out there doing everything he can to try to secure the election of Senator Sanders. And, well, that seems a fitting segue to where we are in the program this evening. Because, of course, as you well know, it's that day.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Hurry, 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 step right up, you will not believe your ears, your senses will seem to have taken flight when you step behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas that is, in fact, the Moran Monday tent on the Horn. We've got them all for you here, friends and neighbors, ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, kiddies and cousins.
every last one of them. We've got the right wing, birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, birthers, booger eaters, baggers, libertarians, republicans, the entire weird, wild, disgusting panoply of right-wingery on display for you, only for you, here at the Horn Moran Monday Tent. Yes, indeed, yes, indeed. You can't tell the Morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morans you just can't tell them much. Indeed, for less than 5 cents per hour of programming, you too can bear witness to the hateful greed, the insufferable self-righteousness, all, in fact, that it is to be a right-winger here in Merca, the greatest country in the world on earth, now, today, forever. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. And truly, you will. Oh, we got a lot to work with. We got a lot to work with this here evening. Speaking of Moran kind of things, a program note. Just saying, be on the lookout for, or don't be surprised by, periodic interruptions of the program. We are having a rolling series of thunderstorms through here. That's why we've cleared folks out of the midway, and nobody's standing around, well, except the Morans with golf clubs in their hands pointing at the sky. It's possible we could get knocked off the air because that happens a lot when it rains. Go figure. In point of fact, somebody's got us hillbillies all up in a lather because looking at the extended forecast for Wednesday, they dared mutter the word derecho. Derecho. Yes, that Spanish word meaning of the right or something like that, that gets us hillbillies all in a lather now every time we hear it, after what happened on June the 30th, 2012, when like 180,000 homes or more, most of the state of West Virginia in point of fact, and some several others, were rendered without power by straight-line winds that started in west of Chicago, blew eastward across the country, and wrecked the strung-on-toothpicks-through-the-woods electrical power grid, particularly in Appalachia. Yeah, that was the source of a lot of our problems. That's how we came not to have a refrigerator, a stove, a microwave, a water heater, a washer, and a dryer, among others. Yeah. Thanks, FEMA! But some wiseacre has been saying, when's he looking real derecho-ish? But you really can't predict a derecho until one forms. So thanks, buddy. Thanks. But we may get knocked off the air this evening because there's a line of thunderstorms blowing through. It's been known to happen in the past. I hope it won't happen again. But it is. It is Moran Monday here on the Horn, and we do have a wealth of material, a wealth of sources with which to work this evening. Let's just throw out a cursory international nomination for Benjamin Netanyahu. You're familiar with the boycott, divest, and sanctions movement related to the maltreatment of Israel's fascist maltreatment of its Palestinian cousins and neighbors. You know, they are kinfolk, after all. Well, he recently announced that the BDS, the boycott, divest, and sanctions movement, which I fully support, reminds him, no, really, because I guess if you're Benjamin Netanyahu, you get to be reminded of things like this, but if you're not, you don't. He had a meeting, BB the psychopath, had a meeting with Polish Foreign Minister Gregor Szczytnia, and therein Netanyahu said that the BDS, well, he took Gregor Schetynia to task for the defamation of the Jewish people on Polish soil when the Nazis rolled over Poland. And he said the attacks on the Jews were always preceded by the slander of the Jews. What was done to the Jewish people then is being done to the Jewish state now. Somebody get Abe Foxman on the line. You know, Abe is forever saying nobody can compare anything to the Holocaust, and I kind of agree with that. It's a standalone event, especially within the 20th century, and I wonder if maybe we could get a memo to Netanyahu to let him know that no, criticizing Israel for its fascist policies toward the Palestinians is not the same as rounding people up and herding them into death camps. It's really not.
He said, in those days we could do nothing. Today we can speak our mind, hold our ground. We're going to do both. We will continue to resist boycotts, defamations, delegitimization.
Did you know that there was even anti-boycott, divestment, and sanctions language in the TPP that went down on Friday last? Yes. There was a clause in there that said the United States will not do business with any business that participates in boycott, divest, and sanction movements. Really. And a lot of that stems from a row with a French telecom company called Orange, which has declared that as a matter of principle, it will not do business with Israel based upon Israel's ongoing, persistent, and chronic human rights abuses related to the Palestinian people. Oh, and by the way, this is just an aside. Yeah, the Israelis do periodically go into slaughter frenzies in which they kill little Palestinian babies in their cradles, because after all, nits do make lice. And thus the little Palestinian babies have to go. But don't look into what Israel has been doing with African refugees fleeing the horrors on that continent, Sudanese people, such as the Iraq. Because there is a direct land route that leads out of Africa, a brutal trek across the Sinai, and then, whoa, there's Israel, the world's most profound Mediterranean democracy. Middle Eastern democracy. Yeah. Well, they wind up there thinking, hey, maybe there's some hope for us here. And they have been met there by, of course, right-wing fascist Israelis who have every word in the book for them, and apparently there's a word in Hebrew for nigger, because I saw a Hebrew word that I heard repeatedly on a video translated as such. Yeah, no kidding. And Israeli politicians calling them for them to be, and I'm not kidding, rounded up and put in camps. So congratulations, Bibi Netanyahu, you freaking moron. You may think the BDS movement reminds you of Nazism, but, well, the rest of us, you may think the BDS boycott effort reminds you of Nazi Germany, but, well, there's a whole lot of us that think you and your country do, so I guess we're even. So there's that, but that is by no means the meat of Morian Monday. But while we're there, and I've had this story laying around for a little while, so let's just get this out of the way so I can take it out of all my tabs. Goes back a little ways, this story does, but it's too good to leave alone. as one would expect, well, no, not necessarily expect. Let's say, okay, so here we are in the United States, and we've got Muslims who keep halal and eat only according to the dietary laws of their great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky, who tells them what they can eat and what they can't eat. And you've got Jews who keep to kashrut. We call it kosher. You call it maize. We call it, you call it corn. We call it maize. We call it kosher. And you can check the label of virtually any product in your grocer's shelves, and it'll tell you whether or not it's kosher for Passover. That means that, it meets the Jewish dietary laws of their great big bearded juvenile delinquent Stone Age God in the sky. Yeah. And remember, Stone Age God in the sky is better than the Muslims' great big bearded juvenile delinquent Stone Age God in the sky, even though the two are identical. Just checking in there. Anyway, Muslims keep halal. Jews keep kosher. Some Catholics still won't eat meat on Friday during Lent. Lord knows the priests have none on Friday during Lent. That's a bad, bad old joke, and if any of you snickered, you're going to smoke a turd in hell for it. The three Abrahamic religions have their hang-ups about food. Oh, that's right, Robert. How could I forget? We got home that day. In fact, if you want to hear the derecho hit, you can go to the Horn Archives at whiterosesociety.org and check out June 29th. I think we made it for about an hour, hour and a half, and we were not heard from again for like 14 freaking days. Yeah, I too remember it well, Robert. Anyway. So there are these dietary laws where God says, you know, you can't eat that. That's the wrong food. Oddly enough, Muslims and Jews both have a prejudice against pork. Maybe it goes back to, maybe there's an ancient cultural reason for it. Things like trichinosis and the fact that porks, where'd that come from? The fact that pigs will eat human flesh, that kind of thing. Maybe it comes from that. And then again, you know, on the Indian subcontinent, one of their great big bearded juvenile delinquents in the sky said, "Don't eat any meat at all. None. You're vegetarians. Congratulations." Right? Yeah. Nobody gets a pass. Anyway. Better that the entire continent should starve than you should eat some fish. So dietary laws. Me, as a 21st century human being, I find them stupid, archaic, and in fact rather a slap in the face to a starving planet. But that's me. Of course, you can also argue that the meat industry itself is a slap in the face to a starving planet. If we were all vegetarians just sitting around munching happily on our raw kale, probably the whole planet could eat, and then the whole planet could breed and breed and breed and breed, and pretty soon, you know, we'd all just die off from overpopulation. But never mind. So, in the United States, all kinds of people keep all kinds of dietary laws because we're just that free. Right? Freedom! And that's great. I'm keeping some dietary laws right now. They are not religious in nature, but scientific. I'm consuming nothing but clear fluids. Because every time I eat food, I wind up in mind-bending amounts of pain. I've been through this before. The first time it happened, I had been mainlining mainlining Cheetos, their Tostitos cheese dip with Cheetos dipped in them for a couple of weeks, and that's when my abdomen said, "You, Bob, really? Give us a rest." And I took a rest and lost 30 pounds in about 6 weeks, and it's kind of scary and unpleasant. And I'm trying to forestall some of that right now because my gut is apparently not happy with me again. Only I haven't been mainlining cheese dip and Cheetos, so I don't know what I did this time. But, by God, it's clear liquids for me. And you know, bless her heart, Agnes, the Viking warrior princess, is making it as tolerable as possible. There's only so long you can do chicken broth before you swear that, you know, you'll lose your mind if you see it again. And she has found a way to make it absolutely delightful. You remember the original chili paste? It was called the, I'm not sure, maybe it comes from Indonesia, or maybe, I think it's made in the United States. They're Indonesian folks. But the name was Sambal Olek. Stuff would peel paint off of a car. It's so hot. Well, she's been making my chicken broth and throwing a little load of that in there and chopping in either some dill or some tarragon or some cilantro. And it's downright enjoyable. Can't get enough of the stuff. So there's hope. But anyway, we've got our, in the United States, you can follow all or any or none dietary laws. You know, we got vegans, and we got vegans who'll eat eggs and vegans who won't. And we get, vegetarians who eat eggs, vegetarians who eat cheese, vegetarians who won't. Then you got the vegans. And then there's even a subset of people who think they can draw nutrition from the sun and air. And they occasionally get caught on video sneaking Hershey bars back behind a dumpster somewhere. Kind of like my vegetarian friends who were strict vegetarians until they got out of around here and were caught chowing down on some KFC up at exit 57 one day. Oh, that was delightful. I think they enjoyed it. They may have enjoyed it more than the rest of us do. But anyway, so you got all this dietary stuff. And it's a matter of choice in the United States because government is not run by or for or through religion. That's why the United States, despite the most determined efforts of the right-wing, evangelical, fundamentalist religion industry, is not yet a theocracy. You know, no shrimp, no pulled pig barbecue, etc. Well, you can't say the same for Israel. Israel gets the nation here. Bibi Netanyahu got the first More in Monday nomination. The nation gets, and particularly the nation's military, gets the More in Monday nomination on this one. This is just magnificent. The story's only 12 days old. In late May, back up, backstory. So this guy immigrates from the United States to Israel. And he's Jewish, presumably. I mean, why else would you? I don't think there's a big wave of Christian immigrants to Israel, do you? No. I don't think there's a lot of atheist immigrants, no. And having immigrated from the United States to Israel, he was then, it appears, press-ganged into the IDF, the Israeli military. Or maybe he volunteered. Maybe it was his lifelong desire. And then they caught him having a BLT. Now, who knew you could even get bacon in Israel? But apparently, some pork products are, I guess a guy walks up to you on the street with a long trench coat, and he pulls up his sleeve, and it's wrapped in bacon, and he says, "Hey, buddy, you want to buy a sandwich?" And he opens his coat, and there's pork chops hanging there, and he opens the other side, and there's shrimp and lobster tails and oysters. "Yeah, I got it all, buddy." So anyway, this guy's in the IDF, and he gets busted for eating a BLT. And suffice to say, there is no such thing as kosher bacon. I don't know, maybe turkey bacon's kosher bacon, but that ain't bacon. Bacon comes from pork. Period. There's no beef bacon either. No fish bacon. Although smoked fish is, as I recently reaffirmed, thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, smoked salmon is, in fact, candy. So he gets busted by the Israeli military for eating pork product.
"Our bearded juvenile delinquent invisible friend in the sky will strike us all dead and we'll be carried off into Babylonian captivity again, you fuck!"
Right? They put him in jail for 11 days. I don't know, was the punishment nothing but matzah and water? But they did. They put him in jail for 11 days for, bacon with relish aforethought. Relish on bacon? But there's a happy side to this. Now, granted, this is a nation where women have to ride at the back of the bus, and there's all kinds of theocratic nastiness that is on a par with Iran. But, again, it's the good kind of theocracy, I guess, because it's still worth $3 billion a year or so to the United States taxpayers, each of whom have to work. I mean, how many days does the American worker work to support what we give to Israel every year? Don't know. But they stuck him in the hole for 11 days for eating a pork product. But the public cried out. I suppose this must be the secular portion of the Israeli public. His story spread quickly on social media. I mean, it spread fast, like the smell of hickory smoked ribs wafting through a neighborhood. And Army spokesman Brigadier General Moti Almaz took to his official Facebook page a couple of weeks ago and said, "The punishment which was given to the soldier was canceled and he will be released home. On the one hand, the IDF will continue to keep kosher, but we will not poke our noses into soldiers' sandwiches," even though they already did. "The Army has a place for everyone." Well, parenthetically, who are willing to kill Palestinian children in their beds, period, close paren, close quotation mark. There is a backstory to it. He apparently has a little Jewish grandmother. Jewish grandmothers are awesome. The nine-letter word most often used by Jewish grandmothers is eat, eat, eat. And Granny gave him a sandwich. She lives on a kibbutz. And she gave him the sandwich, and she stepped forward and said, "I'll take my grandson's place in jail. Let my grandson go." And, you know, when Jewish grandmothers start paraphrasing Moses, even Israeli generals sit up and go, "Oh, really?" Because they've got enough PR problems as it is. This one was self-inflicted. One of the young soldier's uncles was stunned by the decision to jail his nephew. But yeah, Granny gave him the sandwich. It's Granny's fault. Maybe she needs to be taken outside the city, the kibbutz gates, and stoned to death. hey, they're not doing that anymore, so that's a step forward from, you know, Stone Age practice, ritual practices. So I guess there's not going to be any more lunchbox theocracy in the IDF. Note coming from Ron and Raleigh. Oh, dear, it's one of those. Copyrighted, you know. Don't anybody else do this. Ron and Raleigh owns the Bob, Bob, Bob subject line. Bob, Bob, Bob. Don't you realize that Israel is our greatest ally and a beacon of democracy in the Middle East? Man, the sarcasm is steaming. There are electrons flying off the monitor with that one, Ron. And yes, of course. Saudi Israelia asks Michael in Madison, I thought I heard you say the story was from Israel. Surely you meant to say Saudi Arabia, right? Oy vey, says Michael. Yeah, right, yeah, absolutely. It was Saudi Arabia, not Israel, because Saudi Arabians are crazy. Only they're not crazy enough not to be our partners in peace like the Israelis are. Aren't political dalliances just lovely? Yeah, see, that's the difference between Israel and Saudi Arabia. The Israelis just put the kid in the hole for 11 days. The Saudis, if they'd caught him eating a bacon sandwich, would have cut his head off in a public place. Yeah. So we got that going for us. And just because I'm clearing some tabs out, this one goes way the hell back. This goes back to April, but I'm tired of looking at it. You may have noticed back when Rand Paul and that thing on his head, libertarian ophthalmologist, you may have noticed that when he began his presidential campaign, he, like I in so many photographs, was wearing Ray-Ban Wayfarer sunglasses. I have not been paid to say that I wear Ray-Ban Wayfarer sunglasses. I've just always liked them. I've been a big fan all along for decades now, of two brands of sunglasses. On the one hand, the classic Ray-Ban Wayfarer. I've never gone for the aviator because I don't like that whole having to take them off to make a point and put them back on when I've made my point thing that you have to do ever since Tom Cruise made Top Gun. But I do love the classic look of the Ray-Ban Wayfarer. And, well, I think it's an okay look. My other favorite used to be Revo, R-E-V-O. Made some great, great, harsh, bright light filtering sunglasses. They were kind of mirrored, and they came in all kinds of crazy colors. I had blue ones. Agnes had orange ones that went wonderfully with her hair. But they gave up the ghost a few years ago, and Revo is not making that style anymore, so they're kind of off the list until that style comes back. It's a beautiful thing when you have a good friend who is an optician. But Revos are Revos and Ray-Bans have been my favorite sunglasses. Apparently, Rand Paul favors Ray-Bans as well. And he tries to look very dashing in them, although he winds up looking rather a lot like Dr. Strangelove, only with worse hair. He's got that whole Peter Sellers thing going. And once they tried to make the Rand people stand with Rand. Tried to capitalize on the Ray-Ban sunglasses thing. And in point of fact, at one point, they had in their Rand online store for $150 a pair, which is substantially above retail, proving that only a libertarian would buy them. That's stupid. a libertarian. They were hustling Ray-Bans for $150 a pair, in which the word Ray-Ban on the corners of the temples up by the frames had been replaced by the word Rand. That's when the Ray-Ban folks stepped in. After a formal request from us, they promptly removed the product from their site and agreed to cease any further use of our trademarks. Ray-Ban is not at all a political brand. We're focused on making sunglasses that people love, the Ray-Ban folks said in a statement published by The Hill. John Kennedy wore Ray-Bans as well, but you don't see the Democrats out there selling Ray-Bans where the word Ray-Ban has been replaced by JFK, or even a little tiny icon of a sniper rifle with a scope on it. That's a little tip of the hat and nod of the head to the brilliance and genius of the prophet Bill Hicks, peace be upon him. Now, when they were hustling the Ray-Bans on the Rand website, I could hear that they had kind of that whole J. Peterman pitch, a little bit of ad copy, faux literature blurb. I can hear Senator Benson now. I knew Jack Kennedy, and you're not Jack Kennedy. Well, you and I may not be Jack Kennedy, but Rand likes Ray-Bans, and now we can all own Rand-branded Ray-Bans. It's the intersection of politics and cool. So you can't get a copy of, you can't get any Rand bands, but you still can, if you wish, get an autographed copy of the new United States Constitution, guaranteed never to have been read, but autographed, in fact, by Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, if you've got $1,000 that's not doing anything right now. Yay, that has been in the stack for, obviously, a long damn time. Marty noting that he loved his Oakley M frames, but he kept losing them. I didn't. That was the nice thing. I hung on to those Ray-Bans for 20 years, and eventually they just fell them apart. Meanwhile, Steve in New York City says, subject line, Rand. I know. I was just thinking of synonyms of cool and thought immediately of Rand. Oh, no. You were thinking of more Rand. Yeah, see how it works? See what I did there? Yeah, I'm proud. I told you we had some interesting fodder for More End Monday, and we're not even out there into the good stuff yet. Can we have, courtesy of the Washington Post, can we have a nomination this evening for the people of Rancho Santa Fe, California? Yes, yes, yes. Let's give Rancho Santa Fe, California some free publicity by way of a More End Monday nomination. Uh-huh. Because residents of Rancho Santa Fe, California, as the Washington Post's Rob Kuznia tells us, are pissed off. Water rationing is, of course, going into effect across California, up and down California, it being a more vertical than horizontal state, so it's more up and down than across. And Rancho Santa Fe, California, is down in the general San Diego area, which I might note, geographically and historically, has pretty much always been kind of a desert region. It's very dry, like a good martini. But during the profligacy of the 20th century, grass was made to grow there. And Rancho Santa Fe, California, is what you would call one of your 1% communities. Rancho Santa Fe would no sooner allow the likes of you and me to live there than they would go walking through pig shit barefoot. Now, California is in, and not just a significant, but a historic and perhaps existentially significant drought. Because for a long time, California existed in a period in which water could be profligately wasted on stupid shit, like yards. And the one percenters in Rancho Santa Fe, California, haven't quite gotten it yet. Enter Steve Juhas, Y-U-H-A-S. Steve Juhas is a well-to-do resident of Rancho Santa Fe, California. And he's also a right-wing broadcaster of some sort. And he is an angry man, Steve Juhas. Yeah, I mean, you and I would no sooner be welcome in Rancho Santa Fe, California, than say a wrong-colored person would be welcome in the McKinney, Texas swimming pool. Yeah, that's how wealthy they are. Steve Juhas is a right-wing broadcaster conservative. Wolverines! I'm sure he's got guns, too. And he said, people should not be forced to live on property with brown lawns, golf on brown courses, or apologize for wanting their gardens to be beautiful. We pay significant property taxes based on where we live. And no, we're not all equal when it comes to water. Can somebody please put Steve Juhas on the Tumbrel list? It sounds like he's wanting a ride. The Washington Post describes Rancho Santa Fe, California, as a bucolic. I thought that meant it was diseased. Well, it is kind of diseased. It's infested with one percenters, isn't it? Yes. A bucolic Southern California hamlet of ranches, gated communities, and country clubs that guzzles 5 times more water per capita than the statewide average. The Washington Post's Rob Kunzia also noting that come July 1st, for the first time in 92 years, Rancho Santa Fe will be subject to water rationing. And they're angry because they feel like they're being forced. Note the words of Steve Juhas. They are being forced to live on property with brown lawns. They're being forced to golf on brown golf courses. And they're being forced to apologize for wanting their gardens to be beautiful. Look, dumbass, if you want to live somewhere that's nice and wet, move to West by Cole, Virginia, Stan. You'll freeze your ass off in the winter, yes, but you can have stuff as green as you damn want it. I mean, assuming, of course, there's no deadly coal flocculating poison in your water supply. You want to live in a green place? Go to a goddamn green place. Deserts aren't meant to be green places. And I'm not new to this. I've been saying this for quite some time. But I love this concept of these morons being forced to have brown lawns. The liberals are forcing them to have brown lawns when they should obviously be able to water their lawns and keep them green.
I mean, what if a few poor babies die for want of water? I mean, they're just pores.
Here's the ultimate ha-ha out of this. Back in April, after Governor Jerry Brown imposed a 25% water use reduction, there in Rancho Santa Fe, which already has the highest water usage in the entire state just about, after Governor Brown called for a 25% reduction, you know, shared sacrifice, that kind of stuff, ask not what thy California can do for thee, ask what thou might do for thy California. Rancho Santa Fe's water consumption went up by 9%. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow ye drought. In Rancho Santa Fe, they're down to only being able to water their lawns 2 days a week. One can almost hear the little blades of grass crying out, gasping with thirst. And never mind the whole cultural, anthropological query of whether of just exactly how 1%-y lawns themselves are. We had this conversation some years back on the horn. Lawns are wasted space. Back in the days of my forebears, my ancients here in West Virginia, you might have had a little open space around the cabin door, but every bit of arable ground was dedicated either to grazing livestock or growing food. Lawns were something that the landed gentry of old Virginia, hearkening back to the landed gentry of merry old England, had. Lawns are, in fact, a form of conspicuous consumption. Lawns are a cultural statement. Okay, anybody familiar with the potlatch? It was a cultural phenomenon of the indigenous peoples of the Great Northwest. Now, maybe I've got it wrong, but I was always told that a potlatch was a great accumulation and giving away and sometimes deliberate destruction of wealth to show just how wealthy the head man of the clan group tribal unit was. I got so much, I can destroy all this stuff. Right? Oh, this is a little potlatchy. It's a form, when the landed gentry of merry old England came up with it, it was a way of keeping the poors in their place. It was another form of enclosure, you know, the English country garden dedicated to the growing of flowers and not food. I have a feeling there's going to come a time on this planet when there won't be any lawns again. If it's open, it's going to be growing something. Because this is going to get to be a right hungry planet, thanks to overpopulation and, interestingly, climate change. Under new water rationing rules in California, each household is going to be assigned an essential allotment for basic indoor needs. Any additional usage, sprinklers, fountains, and swimming pools, must be slashed by nearly half for the district to meet state-mandated targets. Yeah, see, that's just, I mean, that's a horror in Rancho Santa Fe, California. But Steve Juhas is still feeling the oppressive, heavy-laden boot on the neck of his freedom! Right. And by the way, under extreme cases, once July 1 rolls around, the water authorities will even have the ability to come by, and if you persist in watering your goddamn lawn, turning your tap off altogether. Gay Butler is an interior designer. She had gone out for a trail ride on her show horse, Bear. She said her water bill averages about $800 a month, and Gay Butler said, I think we're being overly penalized, and we're certainly being overly scrutinized by the world. It angers me because people aren't looking at the overall picture. What are we supposed to do? Just have dirt around our house on 4 acres? Well, does that make it impossible for you to live your life, Gay Butler interior designer, on your show horse Bear? No, you'll still be breathing in and breathing out. You'll still have more money than most any average Californian. Well, then shut the up. Rancho Santa Fe is expected to cut water consumption by 36%. And that's because they consume so much on shit doesn't matter. My lawn! See, that doesn't compare with my baby! No. The 36% cuts also apply to the Central Valley, which is the farming region in the middle of the state, as well as Orange County, described in the Washington Post as a ritzy Republican stronghold between San Diego and Los Angeles. Brett Barbary, who lives in Orange County in Yorba City, says, I call it the war on suburbia. And he's on the board of directors of the Metropolitan Water District of Southern California. There's 37 members, and that's a water wholesaler that serves 17 million customers. And he describes his watering hose by saying, they'll have to pry my garden hose from my cold, dead hands. Offer accepted. He continues, California used to be the land of opportunity and freedom. It's slowly becoming the land of one group telling everybody else how they think everybody should live their lives. No, dumbass, no. It's the rest of the state telling you privileged pricks that you're running out of water.
Well, I'm not running out of water. There's plenty of water for me. It's you fuckers that need to do something about it. But leave my water alone. I'm special. I didn't claw and scrape and inherit my way into the 1% for you to take away my lawn. And my feminine poo, my cement pond, and my little statue of a little fellow what looks like he's pee-peeing all the time. Life ain't worth living without that kind of thing, don't you know?
Honest to God, I'm at a loss. I don't understand how folks who are trying to do right by the drought in California and by their fellow Californians don't read this story and just get the pitchforks and torches and start marching toward Rancho Santa Fe. You know, hey, folks, we can take care of your water rationing problem real quick. Texas D in the chat room noting, Costa Rica, Bob, just say the word. But, I mean, I wish there was something pithy to say about these right-wing jackasses. But there's nothing pithy to say about them. Except that they're right-wing jackasses. that their privilege is, that they are so inured and steeped and dipped by the heel in their privilege that they cannot comprehend that a crisis is upon them. I mean, we've gotten used to all forms of, all sorts of denialism around here. Evolution being the earliest one, probably. I ain't related to no monkey. And climate change denial. Oh, it's a vast conspiracy put up by people who believe that science-y stuff. Right? But in places like Rancho Santa Fe, California, we have drought denial. Hey, dumbass, when's the last time you saw a raindrop?
Rain? Well, that's something that happened somewhere else. We didn't move to Rancho Santa Fe, California to be rained on.
And you know, this is a sort of perversion of the notion of equality. All things aren't equal. In money, land, jobs, access to material things, water. You know, water is essential. Water is life. So when Steve Juhas says that all things are not equal when it comes to water, what he means is that the poors can just go die. Really? Steve Juhas, newspaper article notes, hosts a conservative talk radio show, feels like he is being drought-shamed. Drought-shamed. No, really. There's a reason this is in the sort of spotlight portion of Moran Monday. We now, in America, have drought shaming, or at least the right wing thinks there is. Wouldn't you have loved to have had these buckwits around during the Second World War when nobody could get a tire or a gallon of gasoline because we were busy trying to defeat global fascism? Well, that doesn't mean me, does it? It reminds me of Rand Paul's Daddy Ron and that story from the New York Times about how he thought a local butcher, a black market butcher, who would sell meat to anybody who could pay his price, in contravention of the meat rationing of the Second World War, was an economic hero. There's your libertarianism. Lone wolfism. Fuck all of y'all, I need, and your need for water, I gotta water my lawn! But Steve Juhas continued to talk, and the reporter continued to type. He claims he's being drought-shamed. He claims that local TV news flies helicopters over places with vibrant green lawns and says, look at that! They're not observing the water restrictions. And Steve Juhas then said, I'm a conservative, so this is strange, but I defend Barbara Streisand's right to have a green lawn. When we bought, we didn't plan on getting a place that looks like we're living in an African savanna. Steve, Mr. Juhas, dumbass. Can I call you that? Dumbass? An African savanna is not a goddamn desert, okay? An African savanna is a balanced ecosystem. A grassland. You know, sort of like places like Iowa and Kansas and Nebraska used to be. We didn't plan on getting a place that looks like we're living in an African savanna. Why didn't he say we didn't plan on living in a place that looks like we live in Kansas? Why did it have to be an African savanna, huh? Just because this means something. African savanna. Oh, Dr. Freud, Yeah, Bob, yeah. Now, can we have a moment, please? Really? You need me for this one? This one is easy, Bob. I should think you would have it by now. He referenced African savanna because, specifically, he does not wish to be in any way associated with anything African, including the African people, you know, the Schwarzes. That's what I thought, Doc. Happy to remain on retainer. Don't want to look like we're living on some African savanna. Really? Really, Steve Uhas? You wouldn't like to have a goddamn giraffe? Maybe an elephant or two? Yeah, see, Steve Uhas don't want to live in Rancho Santa Fe, California, like those blah people in Detroit do who are getting their water turned off, even though they don't hurt for water. Water restricting is for the people who can't pay. Steve Uhas obviously can pay, so give him the water. It's economics 101 now, isn't it? And it is. It's the economics 101 of Ayn Rand. It's the economics 101 of libertarianism. It's the economics 101 of the GOP. It is pure law of the jungle, supply and demand. Well, I can afford water. Can't you afford water? You can't afford water? Fuck you. I can. Igumfu, baby. Igumfu. Meanwhile, the water enforcement people drive around Rancho Santa Fe and... A member of the Santa Fe Irrigation District said of people like Mr. Uhas, I kind of take it personally. She said, everyone now seems to know what our cars look like. In Fairbanks Ranch, a gated community, quote, whenever one of our trucks goes in, the gardeners all seem to call each other, text message each other, to let them know that we've arrived. So then all of a sudden we see water kind of draining off the property, but no sprinklers on. Meanwhile, the president of the Rancho Santa Fe Association, Ann Boone, says most people are taking the drought seriously. And she said that 9% increase, it must be some anomaly. But one more little moment out of this entire story. Referring to people who grow nothing but flowers as gardeners. That runs against the grain of my hillbilly nature. Flowers are lovely. I absolutely I love them. They brighten and make more lovely our existence. They provide something for the bees to do. You know what a weirdo I am? I was getting out of the car yesterday and I looked down grass and there was a honeybee working the little clover. And we haven't mowed in a while because Agnes and I wanted to make sure the clover was there to provide for, you know, any bees that might be handy. And I looked down at the little honeybee working the clover, and I said, good morning, ma'am. Welcome to our clover. I hope you're getting all you want and all you need, and I hope you'll tell your friends, and you'll all come back by and visit. Because you, Miss Honeybee, hard worker that you are welcome here. And we have long told our children not to step on you just for fun. and explained that you will only sting out of dire instances of self-defense. So enjoy, go back, do the pollen dance, and bring your sisters. Come on back. Lots of clover here. We'll make sure it stays that way for a while. Because you know what? Those little tiny moments. You know, in music, there are these things called grace notes. Those little moments are grace notes. And they make life a little more sweet. So I like flowers. But as a hillbilly, when I hear gardener, I think about somebody who's growing, what's the word I'm looking for? Oh yeah, food. I think about somebody seeing the corn come up, or you call it corn, or watching the zucchini take the place, or wondering if there's really enough growing season in West Virginia for a watermelon to ripen, or watching the Brussels sprouts and the broccoli, standing there as the sun comes up over the garden plot, watching those first little green tomatoes come onto the vine, and having almost tangible visions of when they're ripe and tart and tangy. And you can just brush the dirt off of them in the garden and eat them like an apple with the warmth of the sun still in them. That's what I think about when I think about Gardner. I don't think about Steve Uhas and his prized peonies. Fuck him. So here we are at 12 minutes past the hour. Let's close out the filibobster. And your conversation is, of course, always invited and welcome. Oh, rub it in, Sparky, rub it in. I picked my first early girl tomato last night. I'll bet it was a delight. If you'd like to participate in the conversation, you are welcome so to do. You know the numbers, 304-574-8178. Or the stress line, named in honor of the legendary Cleveland bluesman, Bill, Mr. Stress Miller, gone to his long home. 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676, 304-663-HORN. Skype to Skype works from anywhere on the planet where you might see fit to reach out. The contact number here is, or contact account here is Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. If you've tried it before, you can try it again. If you've never tried it before, it's easy. Just send me a contact request. I'll okay it. And we will be off and running, because after all, we call what we do here conversation radio. And we got a lot more conversating to do. Thanks very kindly for the first $25 that got us started on this evening's $200 fundraising goal. We're still waiting for our kind contributor to have some company. We're still at the $175 to go mark. And we will be looking for that, hopefully, in the near future, and hopefully we'll make that $200 this evening. This is Conversation Radio, live from Almost Level, West by Cole, Virginia stand. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Dedication for Steve Juhas in Rancho Santa Fe, California. That's the Talking Heads and Nothing But Flowers. Oh, Jesus. I hate that. I think I hate that guy more than I hate the preacher character. It's just slimy. this is the Horn. Moran Monday is what we call these days, these Mondays that are for Morans. Yeah. It's the 15th day of June, 2015, and let's see, let's check in on some email. Jack in Shreveport noting, next thing you know, the subject line, water rationing whiners. Next thing you know, these rich folks will be whining for clean water while the rest of us take what we can get. And right-wingers use forced anytime a legislature makes a law. My wealth is being confiscated from me so we can have roads and other people can have clean water, by God. We should band together in a wealth collective and make our own clean water and tell the rest of them to go F themselves. Yeah. Corporations are people, my friend. And right-wingers use force any time a legislature makes a law. Eventually, they want no law at all for rich right-wingers and no responsibility to society whatsoever. Well, right, of course. Ron and Raleigh noting, I could water his lawn personally, however, I believe his grass would still be brown. And what a waste of perfectly good piss that would be, Ron, you know? Because Steve Juhas is one of those people of whom we say here in the hills and hollers of almost level West by Cole, Virginia, stand, I wouldn't pee in his mouth if his goddamn guts were on fire. And I wouldn't. slightly obtuse reference. I get it. It's delightful from Steve in New York. Let the Rancho Santa Fe rich folks water their yards with Vichy water, a la Charles Emerson Winchester III. Mr. Rick say we got to drink all this champagne. Says he'll water his flowers with it before he'll let the Germans have it.
Mm-hmm.
Marty with a question. Knott's Berry Farm and Disneyland are in Orange County. You know how water, how much water an amusement park uses. I wonder how the parks will be kept clean. By pours. Thanks very kindly to Glenn in New York for jumping in on the fundraising this evening. Thank you very kindly, Glenn. We are now only $165 away from the evening's $200 fundraising goal. Thanks very much indeed. Hopefully our two kind contributors will have some company here in the next hour and 37 minutes or so. Let's see. More mail. Bob, what's all the excitement about? In a society where the rights of wealth trump the needs of the community, it is perfectly reasonable for a rich fool to water his lawn in the middle of a drought, as in the middle of a desert. After all, some of the finest golf courses in the world are blossoming in the middle of the Saudi Arabian wastes, and we kiss their petunias every freaking day. Regards, Steve in China. Kiss their petunias. Is that what we're calling it now? And then this observation from Randy. He says, of course, Governor Brown is Otne Ute Aitbre because he allows the fracking companies to use 5 million gallons per well. Or maybe he gets to play Uber dictator in the drought of the next few years, so maybe that's his plan. Well, fracking is an issue. I am, Marty accuses me of being harsh by referring to turkey bacon as not being bacon. I'm not harsh. I'm just observing a sort of, I don't know, gastronomical reality. Tofu bacon ain't bacon either. Ah, yeah. Oh, and what a nice remembrance. Marty says, to borrow from The Last Starfighter, which is a fun movie, Mr. Stress is now battling evil in another dimension. Yeah. Yeah. Marty also observes, the folks in Rancho Santa Fe are those who like access from the Colorado River more directly and the Sacramento River via the California Aqueduct System. Yeah, it doesn't dawn on them that, oh, I didn't move here to live in a damn African savanna. Morans. Morans, morans, morans. By the way, food for morans, a note from Jack in Shreveport. Have you heard of this, Bob? Carl's Jr. / Hardee's, brought to you by Carl's Jr., has introduced a burger with sliced hot dogs and potato chips on it. Why? Because America! Swear to God, that's their catchphrase for it. Because America. Well, because it's too much work to have to eat a hamburger and a hot dog and a bag of potato chips. Let's just cram it all between two halves of a bun and get busy. That's a trend I've noticed. Your local Sheetz, and that's kind of a mid-Atlantic coast thing, I think. They're nice places. You can get your gas and your beer and your pop, and they've got a little coffee bar in there that makes a respectable half-calf soy latte macchiato with extra foam. And you can also get sandwiches there. And, of course, they're promoting right now a hamburger that is dressed with Doritos. Or, if you wish, they will happily put French fries on your sub sandwich for you, because fries are the new lettuce, they're telling us. Now, I am not at all surprised by the idea of fries on a sandwich because I am a longtime admirer of the Primanti Brothers, especially the Primanti Brothers establishment in the Strip District in Pittsburgh, the original that's open 24 hours a day and is the only place on God's green earth where you will ever catch me drinking an Iron City beer. It's the water. As opposed to Rolling Rock from the glass-lined tanks of Old Latrine. But you know, for eons now, I mean, before there was ever Five Guys or East Coast, Penn Station, East Coast subs, you know, the thing that's all the rage now is fresh-cut fries. And places like Penn Station and places like the Five Guys chain, they do a good job with their fries, but long before that, the folks at Primanti Brothers, well, this was working people's fare. They were open 24 hours a day. You got done with work in the warehouse district, the Strip District there in Pittsburgh, back before it was all, you know, kind of Tony and gentrified. I mean, this was meat packing houses, and the rail line ran through, and you could go into Primanti Brothers and get a beer and a sandwich, and they used this thick, thick, thick sliced Italian bread, and they'd pile on the meat and the cheese and whatever you want, and they had this coleslaw that was sweet and sour, not all mayonnaise-y, and so it would be your meat, your cheese, your coleslaw, and then they'd pile on a handful of French fries, squish the thing together between the second slice of thick sliced Italian bread and holler your name and hand it to you, and you were in heaven. So that doesn't surprise me. But dear God, really? Because America is the advertising slogan for a hamburger that has sliced hot dogs and potato chips on it. Even I am not that obscene. Fast fooder. Ooh. Observation coming from Carol. Fries should only be eaten on a Chicago Vienna beef sausage. Wowzer. I added the word beef. She said Chicago Vienna sausage. Vienna beef is synonymous with Chicago hot dog. If I'm wrong, Carol, tell me. What else this evening? Oh, lots. Lots, really. A whole lots. You know by now about Secretary Senator Clinton's speech on Roosevelt Island in New York over the weekend. It was... it was hailed as being a pretty meaty speech. There was some good policy stuff in it. But God almighty, didn't it piss off the right-wing press? Olivia Nuzzi has the coverage over at the Daily Beast. I'm unabashedly... for Bernie in this political contest for a variety of reasons, not the least of which being he's the only progressive running for president. And that's enough, really, for me at the beginning. And at the end. But I do object. And I object to it coming from the left. And I object to it coming from the right. And frankly, of what I've seen of it, the more vitriolic and hateful of it comes from the left. The the really disgusting hatred manifested for Secretary Senator Clinton. So Olivia Nuzzi at the Daily Beast has an article which the copy editor, one presumes the copy editor and not she, has entitled, "Welcome to Hillary Island, a pleasant little police state." Olivia Nuzzi has to have a More End Monday nomination out of this piece. This kind of stuff can't just blow by.
It's an odd sensation to be sitting in the back of a golf cart holding on for dear life as a member of Hillary Clinton's security team, bald and meat-headed, his blazer straining to remain stitched around his bulky arms, speeds like O.J. Simpson in order to deliver you to a secure location. This can happen, I now know, if you happen to make the mistake of walking down the wrong pathway of a public park on your way to a Clinton speech. "Get in!" he barked. Then a sigh.
"Not your fault."
That's just the way things are around here. Here would be Hillary Island, formerly Roosevelt Island, a strip of land located in the middle of the East River between Manhattan and Queens that some 10,000 New Yorkers call home. More specifically, here is Four Freedoms Park, a grassy island enclave named for the four freedoms FDR spelled out in his 1941 State of the Union speech. Freedom of speech, of worship, from want, and from fear, where the Clinton team has assembled a red and blue stage in the shape of an H for her to pace on as she delivers her first major campaign speech. That's one, two, three paragraphs. And there's more shitty packed into those three paragraphs than in most of the stuff you can find over at The Blaze. I'm particularly fond of how the Hillary Clinton security team member is described as bald and meat-headed, and then he speeds like O.J. Simpson. Can we take a moment to analyze that phrase, speeds like O.J. Simpson? Is she subtly, Olivia Nuzzi, telling us that the bald, meat-headed guy was, you know, blah? Or having already told us that she's hanging on for dear life on the back of a golf cart as the golf cart careens about. But having actually sat and watched live television, as did many Merkins back in the mid-90s, during the so-called chase, the flight, if you will, of O.J. Simpson, I actually remember Olivia Nuzzi must be like 12 years old or something. Because I remember the chase. And in point of fact, I remember one of the great jokes that arose out of the chase of O.J. Simpson. That joke being that at one point in time, police apprehended John Elway because the All Points Bulletin said to be on the lookout for a slow-moving white Bronco. Because the chase of the white Bronco that O.J. Simpson was in was slow-moving. But, of course, this is 2015, and the concept of an actual content editor of writer's work is dead, 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 dead. He's dead. It's dead, Jim. It's dead. Obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening. And Olivia Nuzzi is so proud of herself, she has decided to call it
Hillary Island. Because I'm pretty sure there was not an official declaration from the mayor's office that Roosevelt Island would be officially designated Hillary Island henceforth. No, this is a literary conceit of a conceited member of the political press, to wit, Olivia Nuzzi. And notice that how the stage was constructed for her to pace around. She continues, Saturday's event was designed to highlight her championness by contrasting her with the New Deal Democrat, namely FDR, whose four freedoms she has attempted to mimic with her own four fights, the economy, families, campaign finance, and national security. As a hillbilly, I must say that I'm a little put out that the environment's nowhere, climate change is nowhere in there. Well, I guess we'll make climate change maybe a subheading of national security and not being poisoned to death by a coal company. We'll make that a drop-down branch out of families. Give it like third or fourth or fifth or 972nd place. Writing of the event on Saturday, Olivia Nuzzi says the thing was organized by Huma Abedin and Jim Margolis, and she says the result felt borderline dystopian. And this is far more about Roosevelt Island, Hillary Island, than it is about politics or Senator Secretary Clinton. Four Freedoms Park, located partially beneath the 59th Street Bridge, is lush and green and houses a decaying vine-covered smallpox hospital abandoned in the 1950s. The Hillary campaign installed a forest of porta-potties and lined the walkways with arrow signs, Hillary's logo pointing in the direction of her speech, which could be accessed by ascending a glimmering white staircase. In the distance, you could see the Pepsi-Cola sign in Queens. Wait, 59th Street Bridge. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da, feeling groovy. Isn't that the 59th Street Bridge? Maybe I'm wrong. But oh, Carol, you're such a giver. If Olivia Nuzzi couldn't hold on in a golf cart being driven like an O.J. chase, a woman with Parkinson's shouldn't be on it. Yeah, precisely my point. But Olivia Nuzzi is writing for us hoi polloi out in flyover country by describing for us Hillary Island. Welcome to Hillary Island.
Pass the plane, the plane.
The park feels divorced from Manhattan, whose skyscrapers loom from across the water, not just geographically, but spiritually. With the bomb-sniffing dogs, security guards, metal detectors, police officers, men in black-looking security guards, and she's got a thing for the security guards, doesn't she? And campaign staff speeding around on golf carts. Well, they're either speeding or they're driving like the O.J. Simpson chase, sister. Make up your mind. Hillary Island felt like its own world with its own rule. It's a serene summertime police state, wherein campaign staffers told reporters to stay in their designated area, away from attendees. Pleasant and creepy at the same time. Really, is Olivia Nuzzi 12?
Has she ever been to anybody else's campaign event? Because if you're going to use the word creepy in a sentence about a campaign event, I suggest a new rule. You cannot describe anybody else's campaign event as creepy until you've been to a Senator Ted Cruz, Rafael Eduardo Cruz campaign event. You know, like the one in Michigan, where, as the Vice President of the United States was grieving the death of his, much too soon, of his brilliant young son, Senator Rafael Eduardo Cruz, anointed future King of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, was making jokes about him and how goddamn dumb he is. You ever been? Has Olivia Nuzzi ever been to, let's say, a Rand Paul libertarian ophthalmologist and that thing on his head event? And all of those drone-like libertarian stand with Rand weirdos in their red t-shirts? No, Olivia? Shut the f*** up, then. I mean, Olivia? Have you ever been to a pastor, brother, governor, diabetes, snake oil salesman, presidential candidate, Mike Huckabee event? Have you? Especially one of the ones where before it all became big news, they'd trot out incestuous sex abuser Josh Duggar as an example of God-fearing American traditional Christian family values. You ever been to one of those, Olivia? You freak? No? Oh, you're 11, not 12. Okay. Pleasant and creepy at the same time, which might be the best way to describe Clinton herself during Saturday's launch. Oh, and by the way, just a little aside about all the bomb-sniffing dogs, security guards, metal detectors, police officers, men in black-looking security guards, and campaign staff speeding around on golf carts. All of that? Olivia, where the did you come to political reporting from? Did they just kick you right upstairs at the Daily Beast from obituaries? Because that's the modern political campaign. Because we live in Merca, the greatest country in the world on earth today, now, forever. And the greatest country in the world today, now, forever? On earth? Well, it has a lot of guns in it. And a lot of the guns that are in the greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever, are owned by people who are dangerously prone to using them. Yes, yes, it being more Ann Mundy and everything, we will, in short order, probably be talking about Jim Boulware. So you want to cover presidential politics, you're going to see some metal detectors. You might get wanded. And of course, you know, Secretary Senator Clinton, in addition to being Secretary Senator Clinton, is a former First Lady of the United States. So there's probably going to be some Secret Service there. And all that business about how the political press has to stay in their political press area and not go mingling among the hoi polloi. Two words for you, Olivia. Dim leader. I know you're only 11 and everything, Olivia, but back
back during the reign of error of Dim Leader, we had these things called First Amendment zones. And let's say, oh, I don't know. Let's say Dim Leader was speaking in Lubbock. Well, the First Amendment zone for protesting Dim Leader speaking in Lubbock would be in Houston. Because Dim Leader was not permitted to know that there were people out there who hated the very air that he breathed, who despised him for starting a goddamn trillion-dollar war that got a whole bunch of our children sent home in cardboard boxes that we weren't allowed to see come in at Dover Air Force Base. Really, they were cardboard boxes. Took a while, but we found that out. I mean, why would you want to waste a fancy coffin on a plane ride from goddamn Baghdad to Delaware? Really? Or Kabul, for that matter. I've heard it told that back during the height of the Vietnam era, the old hands would see the noobs getting off the plane, and they'd serenade them as they got off the plane, singing to them, "You'll go home in a body bag, doo-da, doo-da." Oddly enough, "You'll go home in a cardboard box" scans equally well. But Olivia, I would refer you to the Reign of Error of Dim Leader, when a lot of this got started, because paranoia. Let's see. She must have come from the fashion division of the Beast or something. "In a royal blue blazer and glowing blonde hair, Clinton took to the stage to deliver her four fights speech. At times, she sounded robotic, like the Paul who won't take a position without poll testing it, as she has been accused at others some humanity crept through." I don't even know what that sentence means. As she has been accused by others? But this says, as she has been accused at others, some humanity crept through. Some humanity. Some humanity. Because, you see, Hillary Clinton only has some humanity, because she's robot-like. "Resistance is futile. I have cankles and pantsuits." Jesus, the for-profit media is disgusting. Clinton borrowed for... But some humanity kept through. All the while, though, it was hard to shake the feeling that she was already president of this island. What kind of backhanded bullshit is that? Does that mean there were a lot of people who clapped and cheered for her, like they liked her or something? When obviously Olivia Nuzzi thinks that they should have been like throwing rotten vegetables. That'll show that robot, Paul. Clinton borrowed from Elizabeth Warren and her primary competitor Bernie Sanders in her tough talk about no good corporations and the need for campaign finance reform. About the latter, she said, "If necessary, I will support a constitutional amendment to undo the Supreme Court's decision in Citizens United." Right, because Senator Secretary Clinton could never, it is inconceivable that she could actually hold those positions without borrowing them from Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. Again, I support Bernie Sanders. I like the straight talk. I like the no-nonsense approach. I like the fact that he has gotten every issue that matters to me right, with one exception. But I also understand that in that exception, there's a hell of a lot of just plain old-fashioned retail politics, and I'm talking about guns. The man has a pro-gun voting record. Nonetheless, the National Republican Rifle Association and Wayne LaPierre went to great pains to give him an F an NRA F. The NRA says Bernie Sanders gets an F because he didn't stand with the NRA when we said everybody needs an AR-15 and a goddamn 100-round banana clip. Never mind that Bernie votes consistently in favor of the Second Amendment and the general right to keep and arm bears. This woman, Olivia Nuzzi, is a graduate of the Sarah Palin School of Word Salad, not associated with the Columbia Broadcast System or Columbia University. And how about that poll quote from the speech? If necessary, I will support a constitutional amendment to undo the Supreme Court's decision in Citizens United. Are there any progressives out there who push back on that?
Well, she's just saying that because she's Hillary and she's going to set up a dynasty. Booga, booga, booga. Progressive booga. Quentin Bush, Quentin Bush, Quentin Bush. It's just like ancient Rome.
Can we give the woman credit for anything?
Wall Street!
Well, okay, I'll grant you that. But she's not the devil. I don't think she's particularly engaging. She's not folksy. And after all, this is America, the greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever. And if you're going to be president of America, you got to be folksy. You got to be somebody who wants to have a beer with. But that's actually a very intelligent statement. I mean, hyper-intelligent. She could have said, I will support a constitutional amendment to undo the Supreme Court's decision in Citizens United. But that clause at the front end, if necessary. Now, I first looked at it and went, what do you mean, if necessary? It's necessary. Citizens United sucks. But then I had to catch up. I went, oh, wait. Ooh, that's nuanced. Ooh. What does that mean? If necessary, I will support a constitutional amendment to undo the Supreme Court's decision in Citizens United. It means that there are other ways by which the Citizens United decision could be undone. Anybody? Bueller? 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 Do I see a hand? What's the other way that the Supreme Court decision in Citizens United could be undone? Why, look! Those nine wise souls sitting on the bench are not corporations and are therefore not immortal. The next president could wind up replacing three or four justices. Both Coke Can Clarence, and Fat Tony Scalia are getting a little long in the tooth. Is this where we cue up Don't Fear the Reaper? A president could... Back up. The process of amending the Constitution of the United States was made by the founders to be an extremely clunky and unwieldy thing. Deliberately. It is painfully difficult to amend the Constitution of the United States. Unless you've got a two-thirds majority in both houses, a president that wants it, and states willing to ratify. Then you can sail it through in 5 or 6 years. But to say that one is going to support a, well, that's like saying one supports the Equal Rights Amendment. You support it in one hand and in the other and see which one fills up first. Because the states ain't going to ratify. And we don't have, we do not have the state government, the state legislatures, sufficient to ratify a Citizens United constitutional amendment right now, but a president with the ability to appoint three or four Supreme Court justices could see Citizens United overturned at the stroke of a pen. And as if something that, as if this was something that Hillary Clinton only figured out by watching the lips move on Senator Professor Warren and Senator Sanders, she repeatedly called for equal rights for the LGBT community, going as far as to criticize the GOP for turning their backs on gay people who love each other. Perrin, something Clinton was doing herself just a few years ago. Yeah, but see, Olivia Nuzzi, she ain't doing it now. The Republican Party still are. To wit, and forsooth, a little something from Wonkette, courtesy of Carol Baker on Facebook. Yeah, this is choice. 50,000... take the no-butt-sex pledge today. Wonkette, 15th June, 2015. Here are 50,443 inspiring Americans who won't let the Supreme Court do gay stuff to their butts. And, of course, it's about the marriage equality decision, which is probably going to be handed down. Wait a minute. Let's see what date. Let me see how this all works out. Yeah, the 30th day of June is Tuesday, so look for the marriage equality decision on Tuesday, the 30th of June, 15 days from now. Over at Wonkette, they write, the time is nigh when the Supreme Court of the United States of America will likely find that there is a constitutional right to marriage equality, although court watchers don't predict that they'll make gay marriage a requirement for all Americans, but you'd think they were about to do that, the way anti-gay Jesus Americans are panicking, by nervously, fearfully pulling out their nipple hairs and issuing proclamations that, no, you cannot force gay marriage right down their throats, they're going to spit it out. And they have taken out an ad in the Washington Post because everybody knows that the justices, well, they get up every morning and they read the Washington Post, and that's how they make their decisions, by reading the Washington Post. God help us if they read the article about poor put upon Mr. Steve Juhas, who has the government government boot on his neck as it rests on his freedom deprived brown lawn there in Rancho Santa Fe. Lottie says, when does SCOTUS take their summer break? June 30th. June 30th, Lottie. But anyway, the God-fearing, Bible-believing, upstanding, Christ-centered Jesus Americans, I love that phrase, Jesus Americans, thank you, Wonkette, have taken themselves out a full-page ad saying as how they will not, they're begging the Supreme Court not to make them choose between the law of the land and God's law. No, really. I wish I was making this stuff up. I wish you could make this stuff up and just say, yeah. Yeah, okay, whatever. Full page ad, Washington Post. Let's check it out.
We, the undersigned, have joined together to present our unified message and plea to the justices of the United States Supreme Court regarding the matter of marriage. We are Protestant, Catholic, and Orthodox Christian pastors, clergy, lay leaders, probably should have left that part out, and Jewish leaders who collectively represent millions of people in our specific churches, parishes, denominations, synagogues, and media ministry outreaches.
Oh, good. Creflo Dollar's in there. How nice.
Marriage transcends our various theological differences and unites us together in one voice.
I think we could have done without the together. They probably build by the word.
Unites us in one voice.
Editors. Yeah, I guess they're extinct. I would have been a great one, made a great one.
We affirm that any judicial opinion which purports to redefine marriage will constitute an unjust law, as Martin Luther King described such laws in his letter from the Birmingham jail.
Really, they're gonna ride poor dead Martin's back on this one, even though Coretta Scott King, his widow, who grieved until the day she died, even though she said, of course Martin would be behind marriage equality. That's okay. These are privileged white people, and they can ride whatever dead back they want to.
We are Christians who love America and who respect the legitimate rule of law.
Legitimate meaning the rule of law that we decide is legitimate.
However, we will not honor any decision by the Supreme Court which will force us to violate a clear biblical understanding of marriage as solely the union of one man and one woe man.
Okay. I guess the Supreme Court read that and went, well, fuck it. Okay, all you gay people want to be married. You know, you're just going to have to lump it because, you know, the Christers aren't going to get gay married. And, well, that's just too bad.
We affirm that marriage, so existing solely between one man and one woe man, precedes civil government, who affirmed, fulfilled, and elevated by faith the truth that marriage can exist only between one man and one woe man, is not based solely on religion, but on the natural law written on the human heart.
Which, incidentally, we would have to carve open chests, apparently, to read. Witzelow Poachley for Supreme Court Justice. We can solve this real quick.
Yeah. We implore this court not to step outside of its legitimate authority and unleash religious persecution and discrimination against people of faith. We will be forced to choose between the state and our consciences, which is informed by clear biblical and church doctrines and the natural created order. On this choice, we must pledge obedience to our Creator, whether we can prove His existence or not. And we can't. While there are many things we can endure, any attempt to redefine marriage is a line we cannot and will not cross.
Because they can tolerate divorce, even though Jesus said, don't do that. No, really, you will burn in hell if you divorce. I'm telling you, no divorce.
We can tolerate that. The complete marriage pledge can be read in its entirety at I will not give you this URL or give them the traffic. It offers a more detailed defense of marriage and further expresses our unified resolve. Tens of thousands of very concerned Americans have signed the marriage pledge to date.
I didn't realize that the marriage pledge involved a pledge to date. Is there kissing? Carol noted, the way you're reading it sounds a little gay.
Well, that's because it is. Acts 5:29. But Peter and the apostles answered, we must obey God rather than men.
By the way, that petition, that our ad was signed by 50,443 Merkins. That would be Jesus Merkins. 50,012 closeted assholes and 431 regular assholes. Do the math. So instead of noting that Secretary Senator Clinton was on board with the vast majority of America, we get the backhanded something Clinton was doing herself just a few years ago. Some of Clinton's notes were sour, however. In her criticism of the Republican field of candidates, Clinton alleged, "Now, there may be some new voices in the presidential Republican choir, but they're all singing the same old song, a song called Yesterday." She continued, "You know the one, all our troubles look as though they're here to stay and we need a place to hide away. They believe in yesterday." Clinton tried to crack a joke. "You're lucky I didn't try singing that too, I'll tell you." Okay, well, I'm just going to quit doing the I won't sing tonight joke anymore. Olivia Nuzzi doesn't approve. And then she closes thusly. At another point, Clinton said, "I may not be the youngest candidate in this race, but I will be the youngest woman president in the history of the United States, and the first grandmother as well." She followed it up with another attempt to joke, because Olivia Nuzzi is the joke czar, apparently. "And one additional advantage, you won't see my hair turn white in the White House. I've been coloring it for years." You know what? I'll bet everybody kind of chuckled, because that's not a knee slapper. It's not meant to make any... No. It's just a little bit of, you know, humor. But Hillary Clinton can't make a joke. There's nothing funny about Hillary Clinton. Brooga, 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 brooga.
See, Hillary Clinton admits she dyes her hair. That means she's been lying to America.
Somewhere out there, at some point in the next week or so, or maybe it was today, Olivia Nuzzi cashed a paycheck. Somebody actually pays Olivia Nuzzi to write that tripe, to channel the late, great Truman Capote.
That's not writing, that's typing.
But don't worry, she's the devil! Right. Let's run over and talk to, I suspect, John. Hey, John.
You're so mean.
Oh,
I like it.
I know. I'm not half as mean as the assholes in the political press who think that every word Hillary Clinton says has to be parsed, but they don't have time to sort out, you know, the manifest rotten, foul, vulgar meanness of, say, the Cruises and the Huckstorbees and the Santorums and the on and on and on.
Well, I mean, I'm old enough to remember the absolute, edit my language a little bit, the frickin' outrage when Hillary didn't throw Bill's clothes out on the White House lawn when he finally was forced to admit that he had relations with that woman. It was just an absolute freaking, I mean, hair pulling, screaming, particularly from the, you know, left side of the political sphere, because, you know, there was the jokes about the, you know, Tammy Wynette, stand by your man and all this stuff. They still remember that stuff. They still remember that she, you know, they like her now because she's the best, you know, at least in their eyes, you know, aside from Bernie and a couple others, you know, she's the horse the Democrats are going to be running with more than likely, but they don't like her. They haven't liked her since she was first lady. They didn't like her when Bill, you know, handed her a major health care commission. And they don't like any of that stuff.
No, they and this is an industry that has been, oh, Jesus, what, 33 years in the building. They've had 33 years they've been waiting for this moment.
Oh, yeah. you know, I've talked to so many people out here and everything else, and I remember, you know, back when back in the latter years as Clinton was, back when Clinton was governor of Arkansas, I was doing government service at the time, and, you know, even then, people were, you know, they knew about Jennifer Flowers, they knew about that, I can't remember that one chick's name, she played on one of the Highlander TV shows that, she had a long term, she had a relationship with Clinton for a while. I can't remember her freaking name. But, hell, she had to actually
move
out of the
thing.
Country
really,
for a while.
I really never cared, who Bill Clinton was having sex with or not having sex with. I mean,
I kind of
thought he was telling the truth when he said, I did not have sex with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. I thought he was telling the truth because he didn't. And maybe it's because I had a cup of coffee in law school, but, you know, sexual intercourse is defined rather narrowly, and it is the insertion of the penis into the vagina or the rectum of another. And he didn't do that.
Yep.
He got, to be crass, a blowjob.
Yeah. Now, see, of course, this all occurred after the fact, but a lot of political and legal scholars say that he would have probably, he would have still gotten roasted in the public for it, but he would have escaped a lot of the impeachment stuff like that had he simply just, you know, backed up and said that it's a private matter between me and Miss Lewinsky and my wife, ain't none of your damn business.
Well, but remember, he left office with higher approval ratings than God. America did not all the way through it, kept trying to tell the damn Republicans, we don't really give a shit about this. Country's doing good. Economy's clipping along faster than it's done since the end of World War II. Why don't you Republicans go get a blowjob, and maybe you'll do good things for America, too?
Yeah, but the Republicans, if they don't have the power, it's like a road rash. You know, it's like getting poison ivy to them. They're constantly scratching and itching and wishing for.
Well,
they were
jealous, John, and
yeah.
And amateur paleontologist Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich proved it because he was banging Callista like a Chinese gong while the whole time that he was hollering about the flag is falling.
Yeah, and it's like this hazardous issue. It's the whole damn same thing. I know intellectually it's not true, but emotionally, when someone says I'm a Republican, I'm almost to the point now, I cock up an eyebrow. Because it's like, what skeleton is in your damn closet? Because so many of these guys come out, it's like, Huckabee, as you call it. This man knows he's not going to be president. But he's out there to generate another mailing list, to get on, to beef up his public creds, to get another, boost up his TV shows again, boost up his marketability, and all that crap. Santorum, same damn thing. He's not going to be president. He knows it. But it's a moneymaker. If it had been me, I would really want to, not just for Citizens United and all that stuff, but these guys make money doing this damn stuff. It's like they had a thing in one of the websites here I was looking at today. I don't think it's gotten a lot of traction, but it has picked up a little bit of notice. Bernie Sanders paid for a couple weddings and stuff late last year, early this year, or something like that. So he was about $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 in debt for a little while. And the meme that started percolating around with that was, he doesn't know how to do his finances. He's in debt, blah, 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 blah. And like I said, because of all the stuff about Hastert and Caitlyn Jenner and all that stuff, it got blown away by the news media because it wasn't enough to tip over what was going on. And that was the reference that this particular article was about, was that so many news stories got pushed off the front page because of, the screaming and hollering about Jenner and about this chick over in the Washington State WANCP.
Yeah. By the way, with regard to that, let me put that one to rest real quick. Zero is a mathematical concept that we know is, of course, invented by the Mayans. It was not something that white Europeans ever quite figured out until the Mayans handed it to them. Let's put it this way. White Europeans came to zero a lot later than the Mayans did. Zero is an important mathematical concept. It is not strong enough, however, that manifestation of the idea of nothingness. It is not strong enough to manifest how nothing I care about the Rachel Dolezal story. I mean, not even a little bit. From the first moment that Agnes pointed it out to me, I went, don't care. Don't even care. Not even a little bit. And yet, I find myself in good company because a little bit earlier today, my blog hero, Charlie Pierce, pointed out that he, too, doesn't give a rat's ass about the Rachel Dolezal story. But along the way, he mentions, and I'm quoting here, the topic completely hijacked Tom Hartman's radio show today. This stuff is catnip to liberals. I may never figure out why. But I'm proud of that. I just feel like my barometer, my little compass got affirmed in that moment because I kept looking at the story going, really? Who gives a fuck? I honest to God, and the only reason I even mention it, John, is to make sure that nobody tries to enter it into conversation, because truly, mathematically, in a proper grammatic expression of the term, I could not care less. Not the often misapplied "I could care less," which goes through me like a dose of salt, like shit through a goose, drives me crazy, makes me run around in the yard naked, tearing at my hair. I could not care less for like a million different reasons. But that's just a little aside.
Oh yeah, I mean I agree with you. I made a guy mad today about it. He was sitting there, you know. Apparently, he was one of those people who said, well, you know, if Jenner wants to be a girl, well, what am I worried about, blah, blah, blah. But then he started talking about this other lady, and I said, hold up. And this will be my last piece on this subject. But I said, if we as a society make it reasonable, and there are even Republicans out there, there was a thing today about some Republican thing out of California was honoring Caitlyn Jenner and blah, blah, blah today. And I was like, whoa, that's an unusual little thing. But if we were to assume that you could be born mentally, with mental wiring, what have you, be born a girl, then what's to stop someone, despite their physical appearance, to be born black? And when I said that, this guy's eyes just went, dinner plates. What? And I said, gotcha. I left. I'm like, the people fixate on some of the weirdest stuff. You're talking about the water issue. Now, you, obviously, I've come to very much respect you for your level of education and learning.
Not my looks.
In the middle of, I've only seen a picture of you from a distance, and I'm gonna say that.
Well, you don't want it any more than from a distance, and preferably at night. So we'll, that's my cross to bear, John.
Yeah, that's the little picture on your little thing on Stitcher when I broadcast. There's a little tiny picture of a guy in a fedora hat, and I'm like, is that him? Oh, yeah, whatever. But do you remember the term the Malthusian theory, right?
Oh, sure.
I may be mispronouncing the name.
Yeah, Malthus, right, sure.
Yeah, well, that comes up every generation or so. You know, it's like particularly the right wingers and their quiverfuls and the beef food full of supplies and stuff. That stuff might have made sense back when the total population of the planet might have been 1 million people or 2 million people. But we're closing in on 8 billion people. You cannot support a population of people in a consumer-based system of economics in which everything you buy off the shelf is coated in layers of hydrocarbon plastics and everything designed so it can be transported and packaged and moved and cheap and blah, 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 blah. And go out to any freaking county in the country and you've got a damn landfill that's got battery acid and everything leaking into the groundwater. You cannot do that. This planet is screwed as long as the cancer virus known as man still lives on it. Especially the versions we have now.
That's a tough one for me. You know, the cancer virus that is man part, John. There's a little bit of optimism left in me. There's a little bit of hope. There's a little bit of me that thinks that humanity has not been one long disaster on this planet. I mean, hey, thanks, dinosaurs. You left us fucking oil for us to screw the planet with. Wow, what a contribution you made over the millions and millions of years you were here. Not. I like to think there's something special about us. We curious little hairless apes with the big brains. Yes, we are capable of incredible violence, but it turns out, if I understand correctly, some of the things that Dr. John, our buddy in New York, has pointed out to me, and he is a real live, no kidding archaeologist, by the way. Humans don't get particularly nasty until we get into materialist, sedentary society. Yes, we're capable of violence in hunter-gatherer bands, certainly, but it is generally far more limited in scope and in nature. It's only when having stuff becomes our primary goal orientation in life, you know, say the last 7,000 years or so, that we really, really become a problem not only to ourselves but the rest of the planet. Does that make any sense?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you've got the point there. If you could somehow magically wave the fairy godmother's magic wand. See, I define Democrats and Republicans by, and this is my version, you can kick me in the backside or whatever if you don't like it, but my version of this is this. Define a Republican in one word. It's called me.
Yeah.
Define a Democrat with one word, it's us.
Or we.
Or we. And that is the, if you take all the smoke and mirrors and all the Jabberwocky and all the, you know, and anti-abortion religion, if you take everything and boil it down to its most basic commodity, that's it.
Well, I think you're right. And hey, guess whose side that means the framers of the Constitution were on?
Oh, yeah.
Because, curiously, the Constitution does not open with me, the person of the United States. It says we, the people of the United States.
Yeah, exactly. And you have like, for instance, the Supreme Court thing, been in conversation with a bunch of friends and associates and various sundry people I've been talking with. And although there are some pretty strong exceptions to the possibility, but the bet money is running right now is that the opinion that's going to come out of SCOTUS is going to be a states' rights version with a kind of a caveat thrown in to say that you don't have to have equal marriage in your state, but you must recognize it from anyone who comes from another state. And it's going to be that hair-splitting crap that they're going to do instead of just taking and going and making the step. And I probably didn't describe it exactly right, but I think I got it pretty close. You know, they won't just throw it and say no. You can't have it because they see the winds of change. They see how it's going. And Roberts has a big problem on his hands. he's got to figure out how to get King and Burwell to be acceptable to try to knock out the subsidies. And so in order to not completely delegitimize the Supreme Court, they think that he's not going to be able to throw two what I call big ticket decisions that are going to be both rewarding the right. And so he's going to have to pick one to throw as much to try to maintain the credibility of the court, because the court has lost a lot of credibility in the last few years. And that's Roberts' big thing. You know, he's going to be sitting on that court for the next 20, 25 years, and if he goes and he pushes it too far, then he's going to destroy the Supreme Court. And that's the bet that I've been hearing. So I'd be interested to hear your response to that.
I don't know if he can I don't know if he can destroy the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court's credibility pretty much left town on an express the day they turned loose the Bush v. Gore decision. Citizens United only solidified the fact, and Dr. Bill has talked about this extensively and brilliantly, Citizens United only solidified the fact, and Hobby Lobby and some of these more egregious cases they've handed down, only solidified the fact that the court, which was once deemed to be above politics in this country, had decided to go not just and dip a toe in it, but jump in for a righteous naked hog waller in the slop.
I love your way of talking. Hog waller. Sorry about that.
You know, I mean, the one where they belly flop in, and then they holler, hoo-wee, and then they roll over on their backs and kind of shinny and shimmy around and get real good and filthy. And so John Roberts did that well. He wasn't responsible. That was Rehnquist. But that was mostly Sandra Day O'Connor. And I hope they chisel that onto her tombstone when she goes to her long home. And if they don't, I hope somebody comes and spray paints it on it. You know, gave us George Bush to her eternal shame. But the Hobby Lobby stuff and Citizens United first and foremost, that is the Roberts Court going, fuck it, we're political. We're not even going to make a pretense of not being political. I mean, look at what they did in allowing the Affordable Care Act to go forward. They didn't let it go forward on the concept that the Congress could do this kind of thing. They let it go forward on the concept of the Congress's power to tax. In other words, John Roberts and the Supreme Court said that the Affordable Care Act could go forward not as a means of delivering health care to millions of Americans who desperately needed it, not as a means to eliminate the brutal economic royalism of insurance companies that said, screw you and your pre-existing condition. The Roberts Court said that the Affordable Care Act could go forward as a tax. I mean, that's all you need to know. And the fact that in the same decision they also said, oh, but by the way, that Medicaid expansion, which actually is kind of single-payer, universal single-payerish for poor people, no, Congress, you can't make all the states take free money because Wolverines.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, that's what I'm talking about. That kind of, they're gonna, I just have a suspicion that either in one or both of these cases, they are going to do that, the hair splitting beyond recognition to try to craft a response that's been, like you say, political. And I'm both looking forward to it, but I'm also looking, you know, at dismay of it because, you know, you're looking at the internet right now, and I mean, that letter that one group did, 50,400 some odd people signed. I mean, that's, you know, how many more times are these religious freaks going to, you know, keep losing to the wills of history before they lose their collective minds and just, you know, trigger off that, take it from a cold civil war to a quasi-hot civil war? You know, it's, like you say, too many damn guns, too many freaking people out here with their, you know, what they said in that letter is a complete rejection of the idea of the separation of church and state.
Well, yeah, and they've been busy rejecting that for freaking eons, John. I don't know how many times the right-wing religion industry had to tell us that they don't believe in, and, you know, that word, the separation of church and state, before we finally believe them.
Yeah. Well, I talk to people all around, like I said, all over the place, and that same meme just travels everywhere. You know, I've been here, especially in the last couple of weeks, as it gets closer and closer to this case, you know, I'm hearing it from the rednecks all over the place. You know, if they let those damn fags redefine marriage, then it's going to be on. And then I'd ask him, well, what do you mean it's on?
Yeah, right. You're gonna gather some nice straight boys together and go lob shells at Fort Sumter? What?
Yeah. Maybe they don't even know what on is, but
that means they're gonna go and do some homo stomping. And see, that's what I fear out of all this. All those sweet, passive Christians who signed that petition, when they say we will not abide by the law, what they're saying is they are more than willing to set up a whole brand new generation of night riders to go and drag homosexuals out in the middle of the night and murder them in the name, of course,
mm-hmm.
of Jesus.
Then you'll have another Laramie, you'll have another, you know, whatever, other town.
No, you'll have more strange fruit hanging from the trees.
Yeah.
Not just barbed wire crucifixions. Yeah. Hey, John, it's been a great conversation. I appreciate it, brother.
Oh, no trouble. Go ahead and have a good day and keep slamming at it.
I'm a trying. You take care.
Chug. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Calling from the road, that's our buddy John out westwise. And a note coming in from our buddy Harry regarding Rancho Santa Fe. Harry says, Bob and Horn Family Commune Congregation, I was once in Rancho Santa Fe in the mid-1980s. I was invited by an older couple from my hometown who had a daughter I went to high school with. The closer I got to Rancho Santa Fe from a rather plain area of West Los Angeles, the more I thought that I should turn around and go home. Once there, I was simply stunned by how obscenely, perfectly attractive Rancho Santa Fe was. In fact, I was so stunned by the opulence there that I didn't stay very long. At the hotel resort where this couple was staying, there was a perfect pool, and everyone kept urging me to get a swimsuit and get in the pool. But I couldn't, because I felt I didn't belong there. The whole place was too perfect for me to bear. Harry observes, there is something about California super wealth, whether in Orange County, in the Rockstar Canyons of Los Angeles, or in the high-tech wealthy suburbs of the Bay Area, that is truly conspicuous and, frankly, has been unreal for at least 4 or 5 decades. California has had a long run of material prosperity in the 20th century, so it's impossible for me to feel sorry for people who never considered what would happen when the resources, water, etc., ran out. Los Angeles itself is an artificial city, for the most part, built on a desert. Without the constant watering of the sides or medians of Los Angeles freeways, the L.A. area itself would have been even more of a desert region many decades ago than it is now. Kind of hard to forget the plot of Chinatown, indeed. That might be a documentary now. O.J. Simpson, Harry concludes, another sign of decadent California opulence, freeway chases covered by helicopters in the employ of all the local TV news stations, hundreds of miles of driving in pursuit of suspected criminals that ever so often is broadcast live on all of the local TV stations. And, you know, this is not a slur on L.A. I'd love to visit L.A. I hope to visit L.A. But as has been noted frequently on this program, nature bats last. And there's only so much geoengineering you can do. And make no mistake, turning deserts into blooming green spaces is geoengineering. And and we've got a long history of, I mean, we've been doing it for, what, 5,000-6,000 years? The first irrigation canals being dug between the Tigris and Euphrates rivers. And, you know, one of the seven wonders of the ancient world was the Hanging Gardens of Babylon. Try to imagine a level of that much greenery in modern-day Iraq, even absent the warfare and absent the depleted uranium. One of the things that comes with over-irrigation is salination. Your soil becomes toxic with salt. Salts. Not necessarily Morton's table salt, but, you know, other salts as well. So I take Harry's observation, to heart. And, of course, I've said the same thing about Vegas for ages. The idea that you can maybe get a lobster cheaper in Vegas than you can in Maine where it was caught, even though God only knows how many gallons of kerosene were expended in jetting the damn thing across the country that morning so that Emery and Eileen from Busted Knuckle can have it for supper that night. It's crazy. So thank you, Harry, for that observation. With regard to the great Clinton cleanest hunt, Jim reminds us Clinton's persecution. Remember Hastert, Denny Hastert, the sweaty wrestler, leading the house managers, leading to Clinton's immolation? Mrs. Clinton stood by her husband and made an angel cake out of shit. I will never forget, Jim says, her aplomb. And she did show aplomb. And the right wing has hated her for it ever since. Because she had the power to do what the right wing couldn't. She could have destroyed Bill Clinton, and she chose not to. But remember, the right wing in America, the Republican Party, they cherish traditional American family values marriage. Unless it happens to be a marriage that they, you know, hate. Let's go. Oh, by the way, we are still kind of stuck with two kind contributions this evening. I don't mean stuck with them, but we're stuck at them. And we've got $165 to raise in the next 21 minutes or so. Any help would be mightily appreciated because digging holes is not something we like to do here. And there's about $1,000 of bills waiting to be paid this here week. There's always bills waiting to be paid, but these gotta be paid. Like, you know, gotta. So that having been mentioned, you know, PayPal, U.S. Mail, let me know one way or the other, please. And let's go over and talk to the angry Indian. What do you say, angry?
Hey, man. What's to say? I mean, there's a lot to goddamn say. You know, I've been in and out, but I've been sitting here for a little while and heard some of what John had to say. And when I first got to the internet radio here, you were talking about lawns and people who feel that they're being put upon because they're being asked to conserve and think about their neighbors. And, you know, this nonsense. And then when I was able to come back into the room, you were talking about religion and gay marriage and how these good, upstanding Christian people who say they believe in this deity, which if you really read the book, is hateful, you know, by his or her own fucking description. And then we have somebody named Rachel Dolezal who has been, you know, going through this whole legend for more than a decade. And, you know, a lot of people telling us that we shouldn't be upset about this, that this is the new America, and if she wants to say that she's black, she can. And there's a white man in England who says that he's not white, that he's a Muslim atheist, and that he identifies as black, and that he doesn't have a gender. And that, you know, we don't understand him, and we're totally wrong for this. Yeah, I'm a little confused.
About what? I love the thesis. I'm a little confused. Yeah.
You know, I'm a little confused. You know, people are telling me that they're black, and this has happened to me where somebody's like, "Well, I'm really black," and I'm like, "Well, I know plenty of folks. I have people in my own family who have African descent. You know, like Senator John McCain, and you know, don't like to usually talk about it. They keep it quiet." And it's totally possible for somebody to look outwardly as ostensibly a European and have African or Native or you know, or both. You know, I mean, we do have to get over skin color. But this thing that you are genetically European and you've been raised European, I mean, you watch black folks on TV, but you feel it that when, you know, Barry White, it is played that you can't stop grooving. You know, it's kind of like the reverse of The Jerk.
I love The Jeffersons.
The Jerk. Yeah, but I mean, come on, man.
I'm trying to work a little humor there, but yeah.
Well, yeah, I understand, but see, this isn't humor for people like me who have had family killed by the Klan.
Sure.
You know, for people like me who have experienced racism. You know, I mean, I can sit here and talk all fucking evening long about what has happened to me and how my life has been fucking ruined. Not just somebody hurt my fucking feelings. No, the power of the fucking weight of the white world has been fucking, you know, has kicked me in the goddamn chest. You understand? It then kicked me in the face when I tried to fucking get up. So when someone who doesn't experience that, has never experienced that, will not experience that unless you purposely put yourself in these fucking environments. And even then, you got to work hard. I mean, we just saw this thing go down in McKinney here, Texas. And the white kids, who were the saving grace of that goddamn incident, because, you know, no one's really praising the fucking, you know, bravery of these white children who are still living amongst those goddamn bigots there.
Yeah, the kids weren't the problem. The kids weren't hollering, go back to Section 8 housing. The kids went to school with these kids. And they were all just kids trying to go to a damn pre-graduation pool party.
That's all. But what I'm saying is one of the young white males that was there said they treated us like we were invisible. I mean, when you watch the video, they do not go anywhere near the white ones. And they're trying to stop it. But you had this big son of a bitch who was helping this brutal fucking cop. And he's not being brought up on charges, and I'm still trying to fucking figure that out. And when we watch something like this, for people like me, when we see somebody say, oh, yeah, well, I'm not African-American, but I'm ethnically black, it's like, I'm sorry, Bob, but fuck you.
Well, I get that. And it's a question of identification, and it's a question of raisin, what we call here in the hills raisin. And it's a question of culture. I mean, and I'm grateful.
And I understand.
I'm grateful for the opportunities I've had to sit in on some pretty serious conversations on topics about, like this. And you know, the best example I can give is my good friend Matt, our spiritual advisor in the 8 campaign, who is a Native American, indigenous person, Indian, whatever. And he will introduce himself to groups by saying, "Hi, my name's Matt. I'm an Indian. I've got some white blood, but I can't prove it." Because that is a brilliant and funny take on what about every white person in Appalachia says. "Hi, my name's Bob. I'm a white guy, but I got some Cherokee in me. I just can't prove it." White people want, in this day and age, now, what before would have been a crippling disability is now a sign, and I think most people probably don't even comprehend that they're participating in it this way, but they want a couple of drops just so they can say that, you know, they're not just another descendant of colonial invaders.
Well, that's a big part of it, and that's a good, and you know, I'm not being facetious here. That's like a good 30% of it. But the majority of Europeans, Euro settlers, that will say, yeah, well, I'm part Indian, and they love to claim the Cherokee, and we can get into why. And that would be a long discussion, a long, nasty discussion.
Yeah.
But, you know, motherfucking, they do that because the idea is, well, you can't tell me to go back to Europe because I have a right to be here because I'm part Native, too.
Right.
That's the only reason why motherfuckers claim that shit.
I think that's a big chunk of it. I agree entirely. But what I was leading up to, Angry, is that you may have it, you can't prove it, blah 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 blah. But the fact of the matter is you weren't raised that way culturally. You were not raised that way and you didn't identify as such. Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, I know who the native is in my past. Okay? I know who she is. I know who her parents were. I know where they came from. But I wasn't raised native. Okay? I was raised white. And so for me to sit there and say, oh, yeah, I mean, you know, but I'm 132nd. I'm 164th. Well, great. But it does not confer upon me the right, and I think we're talking about rights issues here, it does not confer upon me the right to claim that heritage. And the, you know, the by contrast here, I remember the desperate red shaming that went on when Elizabeth Warren was running for senator against Scott Brown.
Yeah,
I mean, he got downright nasty about it.
Oh, yes. Oh,
wow,
yes.
She can't possibly have any native in it. Well, like you do, Scott Brown.
Yeah, but see, that's the thing. These are Republicans who play racism all fucking day long, 24/7, like a broken clock. But when they came to Elizabeth Warren, all of a sudden they gave a fuck about native indigenous, they gave a fuck about indigenous identity. All of a sudden, sovereignty was a real fucking issue for them. And they hated the racism against these people who have been suffering for so long. And now that that bullshit is over, the fucking moment that that shit was over, they went right back to fucking over Indians left and right. And every Native American critic that came down on my fucking ass about that has nothing to fucking say. Where are the goddamn Republicans when it comes to Leonard Peltier? Where are the fucking Republicans when it comes to the lack of electricity, phone service, water in Indian country? Where are the fucking Republicans when it comes to the vets that are in Indian country? You know how many fucking Marines and ex-goddamn Army, Special Forces and shit that a Native American we have in Indian country?
Actually, cool. I got that driven home in a very special way when I was invited up into northern Wisconsin. There's a couple of hallways there in the Bad River Lodge, and it's nothing but photographs for 100 years of people who had every reason in the world to go fight with the U.S. military, be a member of the U.S. military? I think not, but went off and did and served with honor and distinction. You know, easily 100 photos for a little tiny tribe, not little tiny, but a relatively small tribal band. So, yeah, I'm aware of that. And
well, see, that's something else. So I didn't mean to cut you off, but Rachel Dozile has also claimed, well, her parents have confirmed that. They said, yeah, well, you know, we're part Native. Which, again, you know, the Pew Research Center says that the largest multiracial group are white Indians, basically. But they also make up the majority of conservatives in Indian country. They're against gay marriage. They're against mixed marriage. They vote Republican every chance they goddamn get, you know. These are the people who call me a monkey when I go to Native fucking events. And she's claiming now that she was born in a teepee. Supposedly she really said this. And that she played with bows and arrows. But anybody who's Cherokee can tell you, there is no such thing as a teepee in Cherokee culture. That's complete nonsense.
The teepee is a Plains Indian cult.
Indian. You know, I mean, this is nonsense. So basically she's used every stereotype that she's been taught as a white person in the United States. And evidently, her parents are pretty open-minded, and she was not kept away from black people. She was not taught to hate or despise people of other ethnicities. So she went in this direction for whatever reason, and we know that there's a deeper psychological reason on why she did this, and she is not the only person who has done this. But she has gone so far as to sue Howard University for discrimination. She has gone so far as
did
to
she
claim...
Win? I've seen that headline numerous times today. Did she win?
You know, I really don't even remember because I'm still flummoxed by the rest of it. I mean, she was claiming racial attacks in Spokane that the Aboriginal Press News Service, my news group, reported on, and it turns out that she was lying about the whole thing. She was not just, you know, living this identity and, you know, getting tans and having her hair frizzed out. She went to the whole process of actually leading the movement, becoming a leader in the movement. You know, the middle class movement, I must say, because that's what the NAACP represents. And I'm not insulting them by saying that. That's just a factor. You know, they're really not looking.
No, you know, revolutions that aren't middle class don't succeed. So, yeah, I get it. I know what you're talking about.
You know, so you got that. You got the black thing. You got the native thing. But then, you have this young man in England who's saying that, you know, and he's not the only one, who's also claiming this identity now. And, you know, it's not so much that it's offensive. It is offensive. But what it does is it really fucks up the conversations that we should goddamn be having. Because what is happening, and you alluded to this, they see that the world is fucking changing. And do you want to be on the outside of this, or you want to try to work your way in this motherfucker? Because people are realizing, you know, North America is getting browner, and it's not a fucking thing that they can do about it. And it's causing a lot of white people to flip the fuck out. You know, worried about Sharia law, even though they want biblical law, you know, same shit, right? Different soup, same goddamn thing. You know, they're doing this because they figure if I can claim a little black, if I can claim a little Latino, if I can claim a little this and still keep my white privilege, you got the cool factor, but the bottom line is I'm not outside of the society. I have a place within the society. They are doing what black people and native people have been doing here for generations, trying to find a way to fucking fit in. That's the conversation we should be fucking having.
Well, yeah, and I mean, not to make this all about me, but that's a conversation I have with myself. I know my history, Angry, okay? I know that my multi-great-grandfather crossed the Allegheny Front, came down onto the area that's now Meta Bridge in this county, and was the first white settler here. And I know he didn't do it with goddamn roses in his teeth, okay? I mean, the little snippets that we have about him are that he plowed with the traces in his teeth, one hand on the plow and a rifle in the other, and that he sent his wife and children into the swamp to hide during the day because the natives weren't too happy about being dispossessed of their land. And somehow or another, he managed to survive. And he survived with he was quite successful in the breeding department, and there were lots and lots of McClung children, and there's still lots of McClungs around here. But that wasn't some sort of peaceful coexistence. And so I try to come to terms with that. I don't try to say, well, you know, I got a little Indian in me. You know, so, but the fact of the matter is, you know, that first night that I spent on the reservation up in Wisconsin, I fell asleep that night. Absolutely, my mind blown, thinking, here I am, sleeping on native land, at peace, in peace, invited here, honored. And how would you like that, Long Billy McClung?
Well, look, I mean...
And try to take it all in within that perspective.
But the thing about it is, in real talk, if they could have done it peacefully, they probably would have. But the bottom line is, when you're taking somebody's home, you're taking their way of generating food for themselves. You're taking away, you know, what the fuck they understand as their environment. People are going to fucking be angry and goddamn fight back.
No, they wouldn't have taken it. They wouldn't have taken it peacefully if they could. Who are you talking about, Angry?
It's easier to do it that way. If that was the case, if force was the only fucking issue, Afghanistan would be peaceful.
Well, okay, I can buy that, but I mean, we're talking about the Scots-Irish. We're talking about people who were the shock troops for the English who didn't want to do the dirty work. So you get the Scots-Irish over, you tell them the heathen savages are over that ridge, and they will cut your heart out and eat it in front of you.
I understand that, but you know, force only goes for so far. If they could have done that peacefully, they would have. Why do you think the five civilized tribes, the Cherokee, right, the Creek, the what have you, the ones that acculturated to European ways quick? It was easier to do that than it was to go and try to kill everybody. That was the whole point.
And then the Creeks found out pretty quick that it wasn't working for them.
Well, so did the Cherokee. That's why they split. That's why they're split. And they supported what? One side supported the North, one side supported the South during the Confederate War. It was a Confederate general, Stan Waddy, a Cherokee, who was the last to step down. He fought to keep his niggers. This is the discussion that we should be having. And people like Rachel Dolezal fucked that entire goddamn conversation up. They've been connecting her to Caitlyn Jenner. Two totally goddamn different situations. Two totally different situations. And if we really want to criticize Caitlyn Jenner, criticize her for being a staunch Republican.
Well, yeah, there's that. Yeah.
You know, get on her for something like that. So what does she make some fucking changes? We can make arguments on whether or not people should fucking do this. And we can also say that she's privileged. She had the money. She had the ability to make overnight goddamn changes. You got other women who are living in, you know, all kinds of desperation that are going to backroom surgeries, backroom posterior pumping, silicone in
dying,
their chest
dying.
To make breasts.
Yeah, the word we're looking for is dying.
Sharing needles and then tricking so that they can get this stuff to begin with. And then these guys who say that they're straight and can't admit to themselves what the hell is really going on, they don't use condoms with them, and they don't use condoms when they go home. And then we wonder what the hell is happening. But see, we want to blame homophobes. No, we want to blame gays. We want to blame transgender people. No, we should be blaming ourselves for not talking about any of this. Rachel Dolezal was able to do this because we don't talk about any goddamn thing. We don't talk about anything. And we're focusing on Caitlyn Jenner because we're making a free show out of it.
And we can't talk about it angry, and I wish we had another, you know, about hour and a half here. We can't talk about it because the terms in which the conversation keep getting redefined are completely screwed up.
Always.
We can't talk about it because of the paranoia.
Mm-hmm.
And it ain't necessarily paranoia. Maybe it's just a deeply seated recognition of real, honest to goodness, convictable guilt that attaches to white folks. Because if a person like me thinks about it, you know, if I sit down and think about it, I got no right to be here. I should be eating something out of a sheep's lung in Scotland, which I find entirely unappealing.
There's a lot of tradition.
I don't want to go back, Angry.
I tried Balut because I was supposed to. You didn't.
I've had haggis. Yeah. I mean, you know, come on. And I don't want to live on it. So I think this country desperately needs, similar to what Canada just did a few weeks ago, this country desperately needs a Truth and Reconciliation Commission.
Well, it needs a Truth and Reconciliation Commission that's actually going to do anything. And I know we're out of time, but I'll leave you with this. The Dalai Lama, who I know a lot of people respect, if they don't necessarily agree with him on a lot of things, he said something that I've been very redundant on repeating, because it's very, very true. Even if the Chinese leave Tibet tomorrow, Tibet will never be old Tibet.
No, the damage has been done.
The damage is done, but we can definitely move forward with some consciousness. And what Rachel Dolezal has done, and all of the, you know, the ministers that you mentioned earlier, and these, you know, goddamn rich people who think that they're better than the rest of us only because they're able to see more zeros when they go to the bank, you know, we're not going to get anywhere going on like this. You know, this has to stop. We have to be able to talk to each other, and people have to be able to, you know, basically get to the point where you're at. Okay, my ancestors did this, that, and the other, and I'm, you know, a benefit. I'm benefiting from it. You know, in your case, somewhat, right? As you know, someone in Appalachia, but that happened. Okay, so what do we do now? And how do we fix what the fuck was done? That's what you're supposed to do. And what South Africa did wasn't that. They talked about it and they made, you know, a reference to that, but a lot of murderers walked free. An Anglo-American is still in place. So, you know, we'll get there, but it has to be when people like you, you know, it's not necessarily bravery, Bob. I mean, I know you're brave, man, but I think you're just a real human being, and that's all it takes. Just be human. That's all the fuck it takes.
Yeah, it sounds kind of simple, Angry, but the fact of the matter is, that's a high mountain to climb for a lot of people. I mean, I know you're not on Facebook and stuff, but I posted a photograph on Facebook yesterday. We were driving by and just kind of went, ah, and had to run over and snap a picture through a storefront window of a Confederate flag bikini. hanging in the window next to a Confederate flag beach towel.
I've seen it.
And I know that's a little tiny thing, and it's a mountain out of a molehill and everything. But until we can come to grips with that, the fact that that thing has as much business being shown in public in the United States of America as the Nazi flag does in Germany, we ain't getting anywhere.
Yeah, but Germany banned that. If you fly a Nazi flag in Germany, you go to the joint.
Which is what should happen here.
Yeah, but the daughters of the American Revolution will throw up all over your front lawn, man, if you do that. So, you know, hey.
Ain't that the truth. Angry, have a good evening. Thanks for the conversation. Bye now. Our buddy the Angry Indian, time to get out of here. Back tomorrow, Dr. Bill, at 1:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. I'll be around at 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time with Titanic Tuesday. And I hope you'll be here as well. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this go, all of you who listen, who communicate, who share your thoughts, your ideas, or don't, and just enjoy the time we spend together. Thank you. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks, John Fox. Thanks, Ben Birch. Thanks, Weather, for not knocking us off the air. And thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, at acac.org, and always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Night, y'all.